Okay, well, our method is pretty straightforward. We're not going into elaborate meditations right now because there's so much that is elaborate to discuss, so we will take the next couple of rules and we will work with them in terms of impression, and then we'll get right into the discussion of them. So I'll probably repeat a couple that we started with, and then we'll move on and mention a few more that we're perhaps going to be able to cover today. Moments using the breath to steady our consciousness. Identify from the outer form, from the three lower vehicles, realizing them as our instruments, but realizing our distinctness in consciousness from those vehicles. We allow the sense of the personality to fade out, and the sustained reality of the soul to fade in, into consciousness. Try to realize that we are both the disciple, the soul in incarnation, focused on the mental plane, And we are also simultaneously the higher ego. On the higher mental plane, we try to grasp our dual presence in these two fields of experience, both on the mental plane, one lower, one higher. So we are working upon the mental plane and yet simultaneously realizing our presence in the secret place. There emerges the sense of no my soul, no thy soul, but the consciousness that we are stands behind and within all the many changes in the lower worlds. So the magician is dual, the meditating disciple, the operator, working from the higher mental plane, and the ego working, or rather from the lower mental plane, and the ego working from the higher mental plane. We get the sense, as the rules have told us, of the dual magician. As the ego, we know the rules. As the magician, who is the disciple, we are learning the rules. And the two rules that we reflected on yesterday were these. We allow ourselves to understand them as deeply as we can, and to visualize their process. The solar angel collects himself, scatters not his force, but in meditation deep, communicates with his reflection. Two, when the shadow hath responded, in meditation deep the work proceedeth. The lower light is thrown upward, and the greater light illuminates the three, and the work of the four proceedeth. Now, a couple of rules that we will work with today. The energy circulates. The point of light, the product of the labors of the four, waxeth and groweth. The myriads gather round its glowing warmth until its light recedes. Its fire grows dim. Then shall the second sound go forth. The energy circulates. The point of light, the product of the labors of the four, waxeth and groweth. The myriads gather round its glowing warmth. Until its light recedes, its fire grows dim, then shall the second sound go forth. Rule 4, sound, light, vibration, and the form blend and merge, and thus the work is one. it proceedeth under the law, and naught can hinder now the work from going forward. The man breathes deeply. He concentrates his forces and drives the thought form from him. Sound, light, vibration, and the form blend and merge. And thus the work is one. It proceedeth under the law. And naught can hinder now the work from going forward. The man breathes deeply. Concentrates his forces and drives the thought form from him. Still in the rules for magic for the mental plane. And as we ponder them, we will hold in mind the dual creative process. We as ego and we as magician on the physical plane and within the three worlds, learning to create in line with the plan, a special discipline. And so with clarity and humility and patience, realizing the long-term nature of the necessary development, we will proceed. Holding the alignment from the higher mental plane to an illumined point of focus on the fourth subplane of the lower mental plane, we will sound together a great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. could you give us a little more light? Appreciate it. Thank you. We have a little to finish up from yesterday.
Michael, before you start, would you mind if I shared something from the meditation that we just...
Oh, okay, sure, Jared. I was just... it's okay, I was... the first day we had a very lengthy share.
Okay.
And well, I've been kind of curtailing it, but please go ahead since you were here.
I missed the sharing and I wasn't here.
Yeah.
And I feel kind of a need to share what I just experienced. And I'll start with the fact that I wanted to be here in the morning on the first day, but I didn't get here till midday. I joined in progress and was very impressed with the work and where everybody is on this. And as it progressed, I not only enjoyed the discussion, but I also had an unusual experience for me. I felt like I was the kindergartner at college. And I thought about it a lot yesterday, but didn't start in on the rules. Because I wanted to experience from the start this morning.
Okay.
And I found this book to be a very interesting, but only really penetrable within this group. When I read it on my own, I'm like skipping the stone across the pond and not getting into it. The first four rules, as you read them, Michael, I don't know that I'm anywhere near ready to articulate it, but I understood those four rules as they came out. And what I experienced in the time that we had to concentrate on that briefly afterwards reminded me of when I was involved in a workshop at Arcana Workshops on telepathy, and that the thing that I came with the primary learning from that book and that experience is that telepathy works within a group, and it depends a lot on the rapport of being in one another's presence. And I think that in the very short, very unstructured meditation that we just had, I think that I had a deeper group experience that I've had at the Mount in the last 2 years. And I think a big part of it is this is such a concentrated, powerful group. You guys have been studying together for this time, and I've been kind of like visiting. But it was like the first time I was, that the stone wasn't skipping across the surface. And I just wanted to say how privileged and honored I am to be.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Sergio, for your thought. Yeah. I think the people here are united by a desire to penetrate more deeply into what BK is saying and to make it more and more a part of their life and to realize how fathomless it is.
Right.
we think I always wonder at the people who say, oh yeah, I studied BK and then I moved beyond that. You know, and
oh boy.
it's the idea, what is conveyed as if I assimilated all there was there to be assimilated. And I'm just realizing it would take 500 years to assimilate this, plus much greater capacities than we presently have. So it's a sincere labor. We wish it could be more often so we could penetrate more deeply together in a more consistent way, and maybe with some of the electronic possibilities now, who knows, we may be able to do that. And I think the people here are, my impression is, there's not a whole lot of ego here, you know. The teaching comes first, we're interested in the teaching, and we're just approaching it humbly, because that's the only thing one can do. And then trying to make it real for ourselves. Yeah, make it real.
And I know I've talked recently with you guys, and I've been emailing some with Glenda recently about the Moria
Federation.
The Moria Federation group endeavor, and I think I understand that and comprehend its significance more right this minute than I did up until an hour ago.
Why it should be, it should be. And quite a few of the folks here are involved in it,
in the
teaching capacity and so forth. So, Master M, the head of all esoteric schools and organizations, so you can kind of see that, in a way, the branching schools, 14 of them eventually in every country, will be rather under his protectorship. So one is kind of invoking that idea, even though you can't quite make it happen yet, And any true esoteric school that tries to take place on the physical plane is fighting a lot of obstacles today. But we can get the seminary going, you know what I mean?
Right.
And when the seminary is going, then it's possible to branch out and to establish these things over the next number of centuries, in which I'm sure we'll all be involved. So, let's just, and the world sure needs it,
Yes.
Go ahead, Jim. I know the group wants to talk. So,
sorry, Michael, I didn't mean to take your block astray.
It's okay. It's okay. But try to, we're just going to.
I know.
Limit what we have to say to the essential.
Because you saw myself lie was sharing with essential, because I experienced that in the end of the meditation, that kind of revelation why hierarchy wants to be together. Mm-hmm. And it was about this that I remember the moment when Robert. No, what is his name?
Robert?
Borel. Right. When he was walking in to the classroom, and I felt that the school came together. Of course, it's not because of him, but something in addition what we have been, what we are here. So there's something about of the gathering together.
Yes.
What happens, send a kind of presence and awareness, what we all know that when we are alone, it is not coming the same way. Mm-hmm. And that was it in the end of the meditation. I said, that is the reason why hierarchy wants to be together. Because there are those great minds and hearts together. And then you see the whole in different, totally different perspective, mm-hmm. and you are ready to act.
The group is an I.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We've been talking a lot about
and the power,
eyes.
You were saying too, there's enormous power. And when that can be directed, I suppose we talk about the movie. But that, when
Not now.
But I mean that when that kind of power can be turned
toward.
Right.
Well, like magic process.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And we all owe a tremendous debt to the two of you, not just for the depth of your understanding, but for your constant globetrotting, sharing it, and creating those group experiences all around the planet. I think that it's really...
We know what is the truth, but thank you anyway. It was nice to see
you. Fly off the rail.
Yeah, well...
Yeah, that's right. You know how it goes. Speaking of Robert, who should... here, Robert, but he was there at the very beginning of the formation of the group. This was back in 1987, and he's a visionary of this Sagittarius dreaming quality, and we spent a lot of time together envisioning what the University of Seven Rays, or what an esoteric university could be in the world. So he's always circulated around it, and now has come back, full circle. It's great to have his presence, and he's making his contribution, and we've all had some dramatic experiences together too, haven't we? So, just to say that it is great to be working with you. I really am very happy about that. Really, this group is deep. I'm happy about that. And it's really good.
Yeah. I'm also appreciating what you've been discussed so far and related to that. And I thought I was having in the meditation, because it was also, such a powerful, concentrated, effort And I was thinking, are we going to, or I would like to have some time to work on building thought forms together, I mean, in practicing precisely this part of the book. And I know we're still in the first part,
okay,
but
well,
at some
okay.
point, you know, to get into the, because I think
it's a very, very legitimate kind of thought.
It would be a good thing to try to, you know, to use as a test vehicle
over
the internet.
Sure, yeah, that's correct.
A new crook?
Not exactly new, but, well, you know.
A little more time together,
yeah.
Just that.
Well, you know, it's a question of being in each other's presence and then doing a concerted thing together.
Yeah.
So obviously you have to practice on your own, you know, just like before you come to the orchestra, you better know your instrument. You know what I mean? So we are the orchestra, so some practicing on one's own is required. So that I used to take myself into, I had an astrology studio somehow in my former wife's antique shop, you know, and so there was antiques and I had an astrology cubicle, you know. So I, this is back in the days when, you know, Fargo, North Dakota, just imagine, we're okay. And I used to go in there and turn off all the lights, you know, on the day when the shop was not open, and I just, you know, totally dark, and I just stare at the wall. And I realized I could do this with my eyes open, and I realized that thought form building can be a very concrete thing. You know, if you really get rid of all kinds of distractions and you're focused exactly on that, you can really work with your inner shaping potential. You're generating, you're shaping, you're sustaining potentials. These kinds of things have to be practiced on one's own, and we could work out a program for that. Some of the seventh ray disciplines have this method of building the necessary forms, and it's piece by piece and block by block, and you can kind of see what the Tibetans finally come up with when they build these huge internal images, every detail of which is significant and constructed by them. So we can do that. We can do that. It's just a question of organizing our time, difficult, and our presence with each other. Electronically, probably, because it's hard to drag bodies through time and space for a frequent enough work. So let's think about that, uh-huh. See what we can do.
Even I was thinking when we meet, because at least we're going to meet this time and next time to complete White Magic rules,
mm-hmm,
and
yes.
Maybe in, you know, in the...
In the interim, and let me think about what can be formulated, and I'm certainly willing, you know, to understand what you think can be formulated. It is a question of building forms, you know, and it is, and they have to be in line with the plan, and it's a question of selecting that part of the plan which needs the reinforcement of the forms you want to build, so it's just not a chaotic, everybody's, you know, something coherent.
It's a great group project for us to formulate the outlines of a thought form that we all can contribute to.
Sure, sure, and it should be serviceable, obviously, you know, that's the point, right?
The group is together a couple times a year on a regular basis.
Yes, generally, unfortunately not separated by exactly 6 months. 6 months is more like 8 months, 4 months, but that's how it is, you know.
I will offer that idea what, according to that dream, so I don't go into that now.
Okay.
But
okay.
You know what I mean.
Yes.
And that is what I was thinking in the
Oh, okay. Uh-huh, okay. Okay, it might even be something that ties in with some of the realizations we all had last night at that movie. Something useful for this country, you know, and something which is an act of service. Yeah, okay, so that's possible. Mm-hmm. Indeed. Yeah. Are we okay? Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, right. You know, we all, I know, we... I'm just so somehow aware of the volume of material that lies before us. But on the other hand, you know, you can't swallow the ocean, so you have to. Sometimes less is more. I'm talking to myself now, and realizing, you know, that we have a long time. We've been studying these books a long time, and we still have long to go. But if we study them in the right way, we can assimilate much more quickly than if we just kind of randomly, as you say, skip over the You know, the skipping stone. We've all had the experience. But we can go deeper. And we're trying to do that. Now, yesterday, we were finishing up this little bit about Rule 2. When the shadow half responded in meditation deep, work of the four... let's see, meditation. When the shadow half responded, how does it go? Something like that.
Lower light,
strong light. The lower, yeah. Mm-hmm. The meditation deep, the work proceeded. That's it. The lower light is strong upward, the greater light illuminates the three, and the work of the four proceeded. Okay. So we had a little more to go. DK had just asked us, this is the objective of our work, and let it not be forgotten. Let every effort be made to bring mind and brain into such a functioning condition that man can slip out of his own meditation and, losing sight of his own thoughts, become the soul, the thinker in the kingdom of the soul. So, you know, we are both simultaneously, and this meditation is going on, and we are, all of us, active on many dimensions at the same time without realizing that it is so. Because our normal contained human consciousness just doesn't have that divisibility, which is the case for higher consciousness. So right now, I am the monad, monadically aware on the monadic plane, and as a kind of an act of faith, I assert that here in the place where I am not monadically aware. I am triadally aware, I am egoically aware, and I am aware right now on the mental plane and in the three worlds. And this simultaneous divisible consciousness will one day be ours in full possession and in full access. So that's like, you know, being able to slip out of your own meditation, which is really quite limited, into a meditation which is already going on and in which you are participating. You, the higher you. This is very much like AAB's description of what contemplation is. And this kind of fluidity of consciousness, you know, very much under the influence of Neptune, if you will. Neptune, the most slippery planet. The planet that allows you to permeate, to pass through ring pass knots, to literally go through walls. If you go to see that movie called The Men Who Stared at Ghosts, or Who Stared at Ghosts, about, you know, psychic developments in the army, you see there is such a thing as a passe muraille, you know, someone who can go through walls. And I wouldn't recommend it without a lot of practice, but that's the Neptune ability, to just sort of go between things and negate the Saturnian nature of apparent obstacles.
Yeah.
Now, we have a Saturnian nature of an apparent obstacle called the boundary between egoic consciousness and personal consciousness. But that's not a hard and fast boundary. That's a permeable boundary.
Yeah.
And this ability, and a lot of the Tibetan cities are based on this ability to slip in and slip out. In other words, suddenly I'm in your consciousness and in my own at the same time. How did that happen? So, first of all, if the walls of our own ego, lower ego, are too strong, it's not going to happen, because then you're just the skin-encapsulated ego, as they say. You know, I am I and you are you. But when we start wearing thin the distinction between ourselves and others, this business of slipping out and slipping in can be achieved. You know, Christ knew what was in man because he was man. He somehow had identified. So increasing identification gives us the power to slip in and out of various consciousnesses, not only one or two, but many, until, like God himself, or this, you know, the planetary logos, everywhere, the all-seeing eye and the many eyes, in all stages of consciousness. That's the goal.
I think there's a lot to be said for creating a shift in perspective. I learned it once when I was learning some Feldenkrais exercises, and we were imagining a clock on the back of our pelvis, and it was like a rubber stamp, and we were stamping the floor, and we were making little circles. Mm. And then they told us to shift it and put the stamp on the floor. And so it's just this little shift which made a difference in how you perceive what was going on. And so one of the things that I did not too long ago was to
really I started to crave to know what it was like to be the soul in meditation deep.
Mm.
And so in my meditation, instead of meditating as Diane moving into this shifted state, I went into, I want to know what it is to be the soul in this meditation. And the shift was very profound. And it's not that I came up with any specific items or elements, but I was in that shift. I was no longer this small.
Mm-hmm. No. Right. Contained, imprisoned. You know, DK is always talking about the darkened room. You know, talks about the weaver in the darkened room, the mixer in the darkened room. And the darkened room is nothing but the state of our normal, contained, unenlightened consciousness. And there's a lot going on outside that room. And there are windows, and there are ways. So we really have to start breaking out, or slipping through, or going beyond our normal confines. The Saturn is great, but the lower Saturn is the containing world, and doesn't allow us the fullness of possible experience, now possible to us.
Yeah, it's like it never occurred to me that I might be able to tap into knowing what it was like to be meditating.
Exactly, and that's contemplation. See, that's merging with the object, you know. So, okay, so we're each of us practicing these things on our own, but probably there are techniques that we can use, and they will have to be well formulated, and we will have to practice them. You know, that's the Virgo part. Practice. That's the seventh ray part, repetition. There's no way that we're going to do this suddenly. It's going to be a careful, systematic approach to new abilities. If you want to be a concert pianist, you better know your scales. And it's the same way with occultism. It's going to be a labor. So just as long as we're ready for that and have great patience, then we will definitely achieve.
Just want to mention something else in this context again. There is this meditation, Zen meditation teacher whose name is Genpo Roshi, I guess his name is, you know, as a teacher. And he has invented this process called voice dialogue. The technique is not exactly new, but what he does, to build on Diane's point, this is for people of a certain level of consciousness who would go to his seminar. There could be hundreds in the room. So he will practice you and say, okay, you're a victim. Sit like a victim for a minute. Let me talk to the victim. What does the victim have to say? You know?
Mm-hmm.
You're the helpless one. The helpless one sit like, what's the helpless one to say? People talk. You're the wise one. Now, what's the wise one have to say? You are the victor. Because what's the victim have to say? What comes out, because you watch people talk about this stuff, is something quite amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So what he stumbled into was the notion that we have, he'll use the word, it's not about the voices, but we have these, go back to your point, we have different levels of consciousness and you give voice to. When you see it, even on video, and then somebody says to you, be Lao Tzu. I was watching a guy who said, I could never penetrate these poems, and then all of a sudden Roshi said to me, you are now Lao Tzu. Yeah. He said, all of a sudden, I understood the koans, I could speak them. So something pours through us from outside. So my point, the verbal point here, trying to make is that there are some techniques already extant now, which are being used in certain circles, and it's gaining some notoriety.
Yeah. You know, that's, I'm thinking of psychosynthesis, and the sort of techniques that Roberto Saggioli proposed, various sub-personality, super-personality techniques, and so forth. These are rather along that line. And I think it's all based on the idea, the recognition that we are indeed many at this point. Our personality is no monolithic thing. And there are many voices and many complexes and constellations of character and memories from the past, momentums from the past. The many people we've been are all here under the roof, you know. And some of them have fused and blended, so they're not separate characters anymore, but there are a number of distinct constellations, and they have to learn how to get along. So, okay, very good. The techniques are there indeed. It is perhaps a new thought to some that the soul, let's see,
what page is this?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is the white magic. This is the end. You see, we're putting both cosmic fire and white magic together. So this is the very end of the second chapter of white magic, and it's on some page or other. Was that a 90 or was that 90? That's 90.
There was a red 90.
Yeah, so I was trying giving myself an orientation. So we're around 88, 89.
Yeah.
This new thought that the soul is organizing itself for effort, reorganizing its forces, you know, just the way the hierarchy is, and preparing for a fresh and powerful impulse, but so it is. After all, in a way, the hierarchy is the soul of humanity, and our own solar angel soul, ego, is doing that for them. All forms of life under the force of evolution pass from initiation to initiation, and the soul is not exempt from this process. As a matter of fact, the soul, solar angel, is a member of a spiritual hierarchy. It's got 9 levels of consciousness, just the way we humans have. It's probably got 7 levels of form, just the way we humans have. And every the monads in every hierarchy pass through their own hierarchy through the process of initiation, even if unconsciously, you know, through various phases that they rise into a new function, but they don't know what's happening. There's consciousness, but there's no self-consciousness. So the solar angels are no exception, and if they're going to become, he talks about the higher groups and the lower groups and all that, solar angels are at different stages of evolution. So that means they have their own initiations as well. Once we reach the self-conscious stage, we have initiations constantly. Planetary Logoi have them, Lords of Kingdoms have them, Solar Logoi have them. So a hierarchy, it's not, the diversity doesn't exist only in humanity. And the ladder of evolution, not only in humanity. So it may be an interesting thing to think of solar angels highly developed, solar angels relatively new to their hierarchy. Just think about a human being, just out of the animal kingdom. Then think about a master or a Chohan, still within the fourth grade of hierarchy, though, you know, not a human being per se, but still in the fourth grade of hierarchy. What a span! Now, if that kind of span is possible in the fourth grade of hierarchy, what kind of span is possible in the fifth or in the sixth? So that kind of diversity we will one day know when we know these kingdoms, and we'll understand what all the different parts of these kingdoms can do and where they are allocated and how they are functioning. When you look at the egoic lotus, you already get a sense of that. You know, some solar angels might be tier lords. Others might be petal lords. Others might be supervisors of all members of the atomic triangle, or just of one member of the atomic triangle. Others might be the solar angel that supervises in some way the inner jewel and its setting, or the synthesis petals and so forth. And maybe a type of solar angel is all of the 9, or maybe all of the 12. And it finally ends up as one larger encompassing solar angel embodying the entirety. So right there you have suggested the different levels of evolution within a different hierarchy. Okay, so the soul is evolving too from initiation to initiation, and that's in a way none of our business. We'll know it one day perhaps. Just as the soul of animal man became united with another divine principle, namely Manas, and so brought into being the fourth kingdom of nature, so the soul in humanity is seeking contact with another divine aspect. And I suppose by this he means, what would you say? What other divine aspect is the soul in humanity seeking contact with at this time? We can say Buddha, yeah. We can say triadal aspects. And especially, and finally, spirit, or being, or reality, or the jewel in the lotus, or the monad. Okay. When that contact is made, the kingdom of God will come on earth. Now, you know, it's very interesting. The monad does get into the act as early as the first initiation. Although DK tells us that we're not aware of it in our brain consciousness, but in our ego, the monad has made contact. So the kingdom of God will come on earth, and from another perspective, the human personality will know the soul and become the soul and be infused by the soul, pervaded by the soul. The physical plane will thereby be transformed, and that peculiar period, presented symbolically under the term millennium, will come. what they say, the lion will lie down with the lamb, and for 1,000 years of peace will occur, and Satan will be bound for 1,000 years, and so forth, all of which is symbolic. One of the meanings of Satan, one of the lower meanings, not the higher meanings, is the three lunar vehicles. So fish, sin, and soma, that's the sin part.
Did you say one of the names of Satan?
Well, not names, but one of the meanings of it, is the three lower vehicles.
Don't you say fish, sin, and soma?
Yes, these are three items from the secret doctrine which HBB says have to be united.
Yeah.
And the sin part of it is the Satan part, the lower Satan. The higher Satan actually is the Lightbringer, who fell from the cosmic ethers into the cosmic dense physical body.
Can you say more about the term millennium?
Millennium means 1,000 years, so and it's some sort of symbolic period of peace and goodness and perfection and the banishment of evil. This is what a lot of Christians are looking forward to. Satan will be bound for 1,000 years. That's the millennium. That's the meaning of millennium. 1,000 years. You would know more about it, Joe.
You're right. Right when we lasted 12.
Yeah, but that's so interesting. They chose a millennium too, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah, they chose that.
Why not forever?
Well, you know, forever is good. But the thing about it is we're going to go through many planetary changes, and different groups will come in, and there is no banishing of ignorance from our planet until the fifth round at the judgment day. And at that time,
a lot more than 1,000 years.
It surely is, and so that's kind of a symbolic period. In a way, it stands, I think, for the whole Aquarian age. But once the Christ initiates the presence of hierarchy on our planet, I don't see it going away. I don't see hierarchy being driven off the way it was in earlier days at the conclusion of the Atlantean Wars and so forth. I see that we're in for a new period of a lasting fifth kingdom, but I don't see evil as we know it defeated until the judgment day.
Maybe that's the whole thing. You know, mm-hmm. Look over the last 1,000 years and see what kind of changes have happened in humanity. And, we can really screw things up in 1,000 years. So.
Yeah, but I think we'll have the presence of the Christ, If all works well, the Christ will be with us, the Buddha will be inspiring him, the masters will be located in their appropriate centers, their disciples will be around them, and they will be known and recognized by the heads of government as a source of very valuable advice. So there really could be huge changes inconceivable to us. You know, we're on that asymptotic curve, and it's really rising fast. Just think of what a person in the year 1200 would think of what we do now.
Yeah.
And that's not even 1,000 years,
Talk about 1920 and what we do now.
Well, okay, even then.
Talking about the fifth round, it occurred to me not too long ago, just started thinking about it, we've never been as a race through a round transition.
No.
We've been in the fourth round all this time. We don't know what it really means to enter a round Pralaya and to come out again, what that
no.
is going to look like.
No, we don't. And it may be that, I don't know, that those of us who are presently active in this field may not even see that round transition. Depends on where our service lies. But, once we really get going on the initiatory program, from what we learned yesterday, even one life may separate the first from the second initiation, and the second, third, and fourth can be taken the same life, certainly the third and fourth, and the fourth and fifth. So for the truly intent, detached, sacrificing disciple, like Milarepa, as I said, let us all be like Milarepa, turn green and fly. But it may be possible, once the initiatory program really gets going, which may tell us how far we are from it, to achieve mastership in fairly short order. Mm-hmm. Now, then a few thousand years will generally be required before the sixth degree is taken, maybe not so long. It's possible to move on, or it's possible to stay. How many of you feel inclined towards Earth's service? See, I mean, I suppose, as a master, you can't help it. You know, once you're a master, you've got obligatory Earth service of some substantial length. But, you know, the sixth degree can take us elsewhere for training. But actually, inside the solar system at first, we know there are certain constellations which await certain paths. You know, like, there's a path to Sirius, and you go to that particular constellation. It's got a couple of stars in it. And others may take you elsewhere. But usually there's a stop on another planet first, like Venus, like Jupiter, or maybe some training is done here on the Earth. So Mercury will lead. I have a feeling, you know, that first the planets are schools for training for the eventual paths that lead out. So, you know, whether we will see that round transition, we personally are not, it probably depends a lot on our service to this planet.
It sounds like if you're going to see that transition, you're unlikely to be seeing it in the same vehicles that we're occupying
now. No, very unlikely. Very unlikely.
So when you say we, most people, and this is the level at which the masses and right up through quite a few levels of the cream of the top live, that everything is in terms of what's going to happen in my lifetime.
Yeah, my life. Yeah,
this personality.
Yeah, we've got to get beyond that. I think, you know, that's one of the things you can do in meditation is kind of negate the your sense of identification with your personality. It's so important. You know, Roberto Assagioli said it was a daily thing you must do. He says he called it psychological prophylaxis, something like that, meaning it's a purification, a daily purification to disidentify with the thing that you usually think you are until you can rediscover yourself as the spiritual being and really know this to be a fact. Yes, yes.
You said something a minute ago. I wanted to ask you a question about when you mentioned service on other planets as, I guess, a decision-making process, so to speak.
Following the great decision. Following the great decision, yeah.
Well, the question is there any indication that one might make a round on all of them, or all of them that are...
There was something I ran into the other day that
in order to really get that full understanding.
Well, I don't know if we can do everything, but there was something I ran into the other day that seemed to suggest that every part of the solar system goes everywhere to learn the entirety of it. I'll try to dig that up. It seems a little contradictory to the selective destination idea.
Well, unless it comes first. Mm-hmm. You know, unless that experience came first, then selective.
Well, okay. I'll try to find that because it kind of shocked me when I read it, and I don't even know what I entitled it, but it should be up near the top of the AAB extracts. So if I go through the first 20 or so, maybe I'll be able to find it for you.
I was thinking geologically. You know, as we've been through three previous rounds, and we see some geologic evidence, at least according to Daniel. And we've been through several civilizations, and we see some evidence of that, Atlantis, Lemuria, but we've never had a human kingdom on the planet in that transition. So it's a little different than looking back to Atlantis and Lemuria.
Right.
When we look at that vast a scale, is there any evidence? Will there be any evidence in the fifth round that anything happened in the fourth round?
Mm-hmm. That would be interesting to know. But there does seem to be some evidence of third round remnants, mm-hmm. we're told by Daniel, anyway. Mm-hmm. And on the moon chain, if we ever get digging, there might be some interesting... I, I understand that, you know, of course, people's imagination runs wild, but they say that NASA is kind of busy airbrushing out a lot of interesting things that are on the moon because the public mind wouldn't quite take the various buildings and other things that are revealed. But
1 mile high glass buildings.
And thus for Mars too.
But you know, then when we think about fifth round, so how is the average man in that sense? Because you know, now we are closed in order to use our psychic powers, because we have to build up under Karana and conquer the manas. But I'm thinking then, the average person, do we have then back these senses that we can actually remember?
I think some will and some won't. It's quite a clear in cosmic fire, you know, if I can fifth round pass, that if I can go here, Treatise of Cosmic Fire, it's quite clear that even in the fifth round, some will just be stepping on the path and many won't. So there will be still some very average humanity at that time, and they will be the ones that are transferred.
Plus the door opens to the fifth kingdom, to the fourth kingdom from the animals again.
Yes, and that's a very good point. Let's see if I, it should be later in the fifth, seventh round, 747, maybe in the eighth, primary lotuses round, okay.
But so is the, like the bulk of humanity is going to take the third initiation already then, or?
No, actually he tells you exactly how it will be, how many fifths and how many tenths we'll take the sixth, the fifth, the third, the first initiations once the judgment day occurs. And three-fifths of humanity will be on the path. And the other two-fifths won't even be on the planet. They'll either be in the range from the path to the sixth initiation. He actually gives this, but I feel hesitant to get off too much into this. But I'll just...
We want to know that we know how much we have to worry.
Don't worry.
It's really interesting.
The future a little bit, though.
But is it not, it's covered by Capricorn?
Now, I'll tell you what, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to go on with the book. Okay? Okay, now, one-fifth will mantrically sound the words, I am that I am. That's the sixth degree group. Two-fifths will achieve the fifth initiation and will know themselves as I am that. It's a higher form of I am that, because there's also a third degree I am that. They will also be cultivating response to the higher note of the six degree types. One-fifth and a half, that's three-tenths, will attain the third initiation and will know themselves as I am that in full consciousness. This is a different kind of I am that than the fifth degree I am that. And I in one of the commentaries I worked on the difference, but okay. The remaining units will be those who are treading the path and beginning to know themselves as a group. Cosmic Fire 422. And that doesn't mean that when the judgment day comes, that all of this will immediately have been achieved.
Right.
But it does mean that everyone, when the judgment day comes, will be on the path. And our planet will be a sacred planet, as far as I can understand, and the conditions on our planet will be just right for these types to evolve, and for the lesser non-mentally focused types or over-mentally focused types, it will not be suitable. And they will have to be transferred to a place where they can evolve more properly.
Yeah, you would think that those remaining units would evolve pretty quickly, considering who else is around.
Right, right.
Yeah, you would think so. And by that time, the requirements for such initiations will also be higher, because you know how the requirements keep rising with every new spiral.
And when it says what follows, that doesn't mean you wake up the next morning and that's all in place.
Yeah.
Any more than there's creation and then what follows.
Well, there's still,
you know, what's still going on.
There's a lot more development on our planet to come. So we have many, many more years. We don't know. Look, you know, think how the masters know about these cycles and their duration, and think what kinds of plans they can make accordingly. You know, when we know we have exactly so much time to do something before something else happens, we really get in gear, don't we? But unfortunately, we human beings don't really know. We do know there is such a thing as 2025, and we're told that 2012 is important. So we have certain kinds of time limits in our mind in which to mobilize ourselves for maximum output. And I would say, given what we know about 2025 now, those who plan to be alive in 2025 should be mobilizing themselves for maximum output starting now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't DK say that in the fifth round, violent crime will be reduced by 75% or something like that?
Yeah, based on the Sackville Center. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sex crime or something like that. Because the planetary logos will have transferred his attention from the Sackville Center to a solar plexus center. I never thought of the solar plexus as so peaceful, but apparently it's a cakewalk compared to the sacral.
But it's extraordinary in a sense that, I mean, we could say by the year 2025, violent crime, sex crime will be reduced by 75%, and everybody would say, oh yeah, why not?
Exactly.
Now we're talking about how many hundreds of millions of years to reduce that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't somehow it's strange for me to think of that and then to think, I mean, who's going to be doing the crime in that group?
Animals.
Well, don't forget, a lot of animals haven't made it yet. You know.
But where are those who are taking the first initiation now? So are they then in the group of the masters? How much in time is the fifth round?
Well, we know we have several. We have at least, I don't know, 15, 20 million years to go. Actually, Blavatsky tells us that we're only halfway through our round right now, and the round is 300 million years. A round is about 300 million years. Now, maybe there's an acceleration equation there, but we're only about 155 million through it. So we have a long way to go, and the six-root race itself is going to be lasting much longer than the Aryan race has lasted so far. Yeah.
Michael, when you're talking about people going on to serve on Venus or Jupiter, are such beings going to be there later on in this 150 million years?
Yes.
Or are there people, are individuals that are working there now? Because anybody that's working there now obviously is not working in a physical human body.
Mm-hmm. DK tells us about the students on other planets.
Right.
You know, and they're obviously at work right now, but, you know, probably etheric bodies or bodies of which we know not are their vehicles at this time.
That's so what it seems fully, it must be.
There's fully developed civilizations in these sacred planet areas which lead to the paths which we will all tread as monads as we move out of this solar system.
Well, might it be that a soul that's been reincarnating in a series of human lives reaches a point where it's time to serve on, say, Venus, and then their reincarnation is not into this kind of a physical vehicle,
absolutely,
but is in the other place in another kind of form.
You'd have to be at least a Chohan. You would have to make that decision, which means you are a free monad.
Right.
Do that earlier already. You take initiation to Mandasaur.
Even at the fifth degree,
right.
It's possible. You know, we don't know how to. But anyway, sure. The vehicles, we don't know anything about the vehicles.
Okay.
Like I say, you know, they probably look better than the space bar in Star Wars. But, you know, maybe on Venus they look pretty good altogether. But it's not necessarily this type of vehicle at all. Now, here's this section, sex stimulation. Let's see. This is on Treatise on Conquering Fire, page 297. And I'm trying to see what the predecessor is. The heavenly man will be doing what, you see? I'm not sure exactly what point this is. Maybe, Lynn, if you can see what that is.
Vitalizing his middle center is what it says, Michael.
Vitalizing his middle center, where is it? Just point G?
You're right there, yeah. G. Just G.
Okay, when the heavenly man who at present demonstrates through the earth's scheme has succeeded in vitalizing his middle center, okay, or in directing the force of planetary kundalini away from the lower centers to the solar plexus center, a new cycle will be reached. His work is as yet in an embryonic condition, and 2.5 more, and this is the tricky word, we don't know what that means. 2.5 more cycles. It could be around. It could be something else. Must transpire before he accomplishes the necessary work. Okay, sex stimulation, as now understood, will be showing a tendency to manifest in creation, not so much on the physical plane as on the astral and mental, demonstrating in the creations of art and beauty and the objective work of the scientists. Crime, as now seen, based largely on sex emotion, will be a thing of the past, and physical plane, license, orgy, and horror will be reduced 75%. Apparently, we do have a bit of orgy and horror going on at the present time, and a reduction of 75% will be anticipated.
Physical plane license.
That means like lawless behavior using the sex energy. It's just anything goes. That's license.
And using the sex energy doesn't necessarily mean sexual activity as we think of it. It means
unlawful.
It might be robbing a bank if that's being pushed by that particular body.
Sure. That's possible too. That's possible.
Something what is not making sense to me is that, sorry.
What's not making sense to me is we're not getting into the book.
Sorry. That we are talking about millions of years, and now we are talk also that that humanity can take the first initiation. So how many actually is that humanity? Because if we are talking 12 million years,
To the fifth round. Well,
so
no,
then something what is not making sense.
Whatever. Let's take that up. Let's take that up later.
Okay.
We cannot master the science of cycles right now. We'll take up that 12 million years. The knowers of God in that era, the millennium, will preponderate over those who are simply aspiring to that knowledge. And their contact and the result of the force they transmit will be felt in the kingdoms of nature, which are in pretty difficult shape right now, but when the human kingdom, who is the macrocosm to the various kingdoms of nature, gets into better shape, the kingdoms will also rise. Dominion over all forms and the power to act as transmitters of that spiritual energy we call love is the promised reward of the triumphant solar angels, Venus and Pisces, and the prized goal of their meditation work. So this is what the solar angels are aiming for, and in the millennium, which might last a whole lot longer than 1,000 years, that's a symbolic that figure.
Okay, the word love, it means oneness for us. Is that what we're saying here?
Spiritually, well, love is such a big thing that it's the whole prominence of the second aspect of divinity. It results in oneness, unity, right relations, heart energy, realization of being one being, you know. It's so many things. Okay. The Son of God, the sons of God will triumph on... Here, Sheldon, read that, please, would you?
The sons of God will triumph on earth in full incarnated expression and will bring light, therefore life, to all the manifested forms. This is the life more abundant of which the Christ speaks. This is the achievement of the true Nirvani, who, living in unbroken meditation in a spiritual realm, yet can work on earth. The work of initiation is to enable a man to live ever at the center, but to act as a distributor of divine energy in any direction, and, after the later initiations in all directions.
So at least we have an understanding of what a nirvani is, and the unbroken, sustained will and contemplation meditation of which he is capable. And that's the Buddha too, right? You know, the Buddha is our prototype of the human nirvani, even though each one of these solar angels is a nirvani, can live in sustained meditation. That's why they're called dhyanis, in a way. Dhyana is the stage of meditation and the eight means of yoga, and a dhyani is one who can sustain this meditation without interruption.
The five dhyani buddhas.
Mm-hmm. Michael, right before where you put in Age of Aquarius, did you inadvertently delete a sentence from the text?
I might have, you know, and if
I think you did.
If I did, I'm going to copy this like so, and go back here like this. No.
I thought there was another sentence in there.
And that's what I meant by Age of Aquarius.
Yeah.
Okay, and the Buddha is the prototype here. No, that's incorrect. Yeah. Okay. Don, you guys, you know, get me now. Okay. Okay. Fine. Good. We will now, in our consideration of the next rule, take up the work of the lesser light of man on the physical plane. I, who have entered somewhat into an understanding of the life of the solar angel. Ooh, that's UK talking. He's a somewhat.
Yeah, yeah.
And what are we? A non-what.
How do you spell that last one, Michael?
Well, it depends on whether we're medieval or philosophical. Philosophical would be N-O-N-E-W-H-A-T, and otherwise N-U-N-W-H-A-T.
I thought you might have said N-U-N-B.
Well, that's good too.
That's good too.
Okay. And then we'd have to say instead of what, and we have to say wit. Okay.
It's inspiring somewhat.
That means that there's more to the solar angel and the council within the sun that BK has totally mastered. So I kind of want to emphasize, he tends to be humble because of his perspective.
So this is before it was known he was a master. He was just a student at this
point. That's right, at this point, yeah.
I think he's also one of those kind of self-deprecating things, trying to indicate that even he should not be ascribed some sort of omniscience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's still working stuff out.
Putting himself in the place where he is. Remember the solar angel is a very great solar being in the council. Of the sun. Okay, so I seek to assure my fellow pilgrims that the passing things of the senses are but trivial. We need this assurance, I think. And of no value compared to the rewards here and in this life to the man who seeks to merge his everyday consciousness with that of his soul. I wish more people could take this to heart, including ourselves. I seek to assure my fellow pilgrims that the passing things of the senses are but trivial and of no value compared to the rewards herein and this life to the man who seeks to merge his everyday consciousness with that of his soul. I'm sure once we get into the sustained soul consciousness, we will kick ourselves many times over the waste of time over trivial things.
What's the page site on that?
Right up to 90, 89.
Mm-hmm.
He enters into the community of souls and stands not alone. The only lonely periods are the result of wrong orientation and the holding on to that which hides the vision and fills the hands so full that they cannot grasp that what has been called the jewel and the lotus. It's great writing, you know, and it's just so compelling. And you must say, well, then why cannot more people be compelled? I'm sure his hope for world goodwill was meant to be a vast organism enlisting the many people of goodwill around the world. You know, in other words, the promise of many of these seeds that he has planted have not been completely fulfilled.
I think, was a Buddhism is because people like us have not taken the teaching out further into the world.
Yeah, lived it, taken it, and we had been involved with trivial things. You know, when I think of my pursuit of pens, I don't know. I always have to go into a store and buy pens or electronic equipment or something, you know. What am I doing? I mean, just think of how we spend our time.
But I think one of the big reasons is that between the groups, there is not enough real brotherhood and love.
Well, the crisis around which a lot of this expression is made by DK, including the Great Invocation, is the Second World War. And there was a unique opportunity there because all of humanity had been so traumatized to it that their willpower was available to apply to it, and instead of applying to it, the great powers went into the thing of saying, to protect ourselves from an evil like Hitler, we will now divvy out what's left of his security forces and fight fire with fire, and we stepped off the path and went down the left-hand side. That's how I see it.
Well, we responded to fear, and we went into indulgence.
Yes.
We said, it's peace. Let's enjoy ourselves and overdo everything.
Right. Capitalism.
Yeah, and that kind of thing. No, I'm not
saying
that. Not going to that movie.
Was a car in every
Yeah, from a chicken in every pot, right? Well, okay, but you know, we can never say that our time is up. We can never say we failed. Because to say so means to reduce our point of tension, and so the good that we could do will be reduced accordingly.
Right.
We must still move forward as if there were hope. Many delays may have set in already. You know, that extra 300-year period, which he said, and I can't tell you where, but could be delayed 300 years. He promises at one point in Esoteric Psychology 1 that there will be no destruction of humanity, but only delay if the disciples don't rise to the occasion. But some of his later writings are more dire.
This is somewhat of a cliche, but nonetheless I think true, that we see far more of the distressing than we do the encouraging signs.
Sure.
There's enormous, if you scratch the surface, the enormous signs of new life.
I think a balanced point of view is needed, really.
Well, right here at Ojai, I'm sure you all know this, but you come down Montgomery Street, that church there has now become Center for the Work.
Yeah.
Byron Keith, who's like Eckhart Tolle, one of the people who was depressed and almost committed suicide, I'm exaggerating slightly for her, wake up and have a lot to say now about reducing glamour, at least.
Okay. We have to keep the balanced point of view. I think we shouldn't become euphoric, nor should we become unrealistic. Somewhere in Libra, somewhere is the noble middle path of proportional perception, But we should act as if we're terribly enthusiastic.
You read the Tibetans' writings, though, in the late 30s, leading up to the war.
Yeah.
And I think that what he's saying is, humanity is going to have this big wrenching change.
Yeah.
It's going to be a catharsis if you see it coming.
Yeah.
And by an act of will, this is what he's trying to do in the Great Invocation at that time, decide as humanity, step back from the abyss of conflict, and apply the energy instead of the conflict to the healing.
Yeah.
Each time we have the opportunity to do that, and if we the time we finally do it, then instead of having to rebuild what we've bombed into rubble, we've got the stepping stone that we've built since then.
Yeah.
And we're about to be given that, we're being given that opportunity again.
I think it's happening again, 1936 and all the goodwill work and the second race cycle of that time, they were really trying like mad to keep us from going over the edge.
Right.
But he said that among the men and women of goodwill and among the disciples of the world, there was not enough strength to prevent it.
Right.
So now we're at that same antechamber of dire possibility, and we have to see whether humanity cannot assert itself. There are many more resources now, much more mobilized goodwill and practical expression of higher consciousness. Yes.
It seems to be
building on what Lynn said, we're still, for the most part, seeing the world through the lens of the Piscean glasses. And things are happening before our very eyes that we miss because they're not big and grand the way we have seen before. There are little things happening all over that are so humble. They don't make that impact, but it's that Aquarian group momentum that so it's easy to overlook it.
Right.
And I think that as workers in the world, we need to start paying more attention and working with that energy.
That's right.
Well, I think, you know, the simple meditation report of the Arcane School, they always have you note as the very last item examples of the work of the new group world servers in the world, you know, so that we at least had our eyes on what was happening. You know, covering the earth with verdure and so forth, and, you know, there's a lot of brush that's old and ready to burn, but underneath it is the new growth, and we need to see that too, absolutely. Gotta do this.
One thing what fits wonderfully here is that I met the Hopi Indians messenger, and he said that how his elder had said to him, "Remember, my son, you have always time to the last second."
That's good. You know, the old saying, thank goodness for the last minute, otherwise nothing would ever get done.
Okay.
Just to remake it, that's why Paul Hawking's book is called Blessed Unrest.
Yes.
And that's what we have to see. Those, you know, those hundreds of thousands of new groups of world servants are that very thing that are moving the momentum forward. And we don't see that. You know, what if we focus on the growth? So if we're going to focus on the negative, that will grow. And what do we choose to focus on? I mean, yes, we need to recognize what isn't working, but just as in a movie, there are 99% one vote. 99% of humanity. Each of us has a vote. That would open. I mean, 99% versus 1%. I mean, there's the answer right there.
That's a very powerful 1%, but okay.
Yeah.
And we have to guard against the disenfranchisement.
But is it not there when we compare those people who are making the changes? They are always those who are able to work over their borders, and I think that's why the disciple groups should be emphasizing more of that goodwill towards others, being together more.
Well, a fundamental change in the playing field is witnessed by these computers sitting here, and that 99% have the ability to converse with one another instantly and all around the planet in a way they never had before. Prior to these wars, what these countries do is they isolate their populations and propagandize against them.
Exactly.
Before the American Civil War, Lincoln's name wasn't even on the ballot in the South. And all you get is one side of the story. It was the same thing with Nazi Germany. You couldn't get word in. Right now, a lot of people like the Chinese are recognizing we can't really keep our people in the dark anymore. We're going to have to deal with the fact that the secrets can't be kept.
They'll reorient themselves.
So that gives us an extra thing that we can use. Yeah. Just like you couldn't do what you're doing now with the Moria Federation, you couldn't ever have done it before.
No, not within the last 5 or a few years were probably the only time you could be done. I think that the many people of goodwill will be evoked. In other words, I think that we will be brought to such a crisis situation that they will have to rise together in rejection of the unworkable scenarios that are being offered to us as the only true reality. In other words, there's nothing like the opposition to evoke strength among those who are harmoniously inclined. So I do believe that day of evocation is coming.
Yeah.
And then America, here, speaking of America, although one third of the world will recognize more its soul potential, represented by the Aquarian energy and the second ray.
Yeah.
meaning banding together in brotherhood for a more creative outcome, a suitable outcome. But I think unless things get bad enough, that amalgamation, that coming together, doesn't occur. It is that way, you know.
Well, remember the Tibetans talk about that there's going to be a new, really significant revelation, and he says it's going to come through the radio. And a lot of people look at that, take it too literally, and say, see, it didn't happen through the radio. Therefore, that wasn't the correct statement. But I think that what he's actually saying is the technological explosion that's about to happen, the tip of the iceberg we can see now is the radio.
Yeah.
That thing is going to expand into, and I think what it's expanded into is things like...
It's like I just can't believe, you know, sometimes the loosest trust still literally wants the radio. You know, okay. Anyway.
Rule three,
the energy...
Circulus.
Okay.
All right.
The point of life, the product of the labors of the four, waxeth and groweth. The myriads gather around this glowing warmth until its light recedes, its fire grows dim, then shall the second sound go forth. The white magician, having through meditation and conscious purpose formed a focal point of energy upon the mental plane, okay, and that's the product of the four, increases the vibration through strenuous concentration. So, let's say, it has to grow, and he, on the physical plane, increases his concentration to grow it.
Is there any difference between waxes and
grows? No, it's just the wax is an old English term which means to...
It's like the waxing cycle of the
grow cyclically, to grow within the cycle.
Two words, if they mean the same.
That's just old English poetry.
Or you can think of a candle, as the wax turns down, it gets larger.
But it's wax and wanes.
In other words, it's cyclic growth. It's cyclic growth.
Wax means to increase, wane means to decrease.
That's right. Okay. All right. He begins to visualize in detail the form he is seeking to build. So he concentrates and visualizes. Okay? Visualizes. He pictures it with all its component parts. It's not a shadow, it's a reflection. He sees before his mind's eye the consummated product of the egoic meditation as he has succeeded in bringing it through. So the image, let's just say the archetype rests with the ego. And the man receives. Rests with the ego, and the magician receives and augments it. Okay, so in other words, the ego already has this image. We, to the extent we can, receive it and then build it on the mental plane in all detail, which doesn't mean that we don't build it as well right here between the pineal and the pituitary gland. Is the mental plane anyplace else? You know, anything that... Is the mental plane in the head?
No.
As well?
Yeah,
certainly is, isn't it?
The center plane.
Everything, exactly. And, yeah, exactly. So this powerful area in the head is physical, etheric, astral, mental, and even the soul plane is there as well.
Yeah, the physical spot you're talking about is just like... the place where you plug the wall, the power plug into the socket.
Yeah. But we are actually, as long as we're dealing with the cosmic physical plane, the whole idea of locations is an important idea, especially in the dense body of the logos. Because if we're talking about a Buddhic permanent atom having the shape of a figure eight, there is form, even though it's very fluid and vibrant form. And where there is form, there is location. It's not a really formless world, because it's still on the cosmic physical plane. I mean, you know, when you think of our own etheric levels, there is location. Something's here, something's there, and so forth. And so it is on the cosmic ethers as well, only, you know, perhaps less dense. I mean, it's certainly less dense, but still there is location. Okay. So, This produces what is here called the secondary note. Now we're going to see what this secondary note is. The consummated product of the egoic meditation, as he has succeeded in bringing it through, he visualizes it, and this, does he mean the visualization? It corresponds to the ego's projected sounded note with which the brain has been impressed. The first being the note emanated from the ego on its own plane, which awakened the reflection and called forth response. Now, we, magicians, are the awakened reflection. We are the reflection of the ego. We awake, and we produce a form on the mental plane totally visualized, but now we have to see where this secondary note, what this secondary note is. Two possibilities. One, that it is the note that the creative thought form is sounding forth. The second is that it is the om that the magician himself sounds forth. Then shall the second sound go forth. We do know that that little creative thought form is sounding its own note. But at the same time, it is a deliberate act of magic in which we sound an om, augmenting the strength of that thought form. So let's see if we can find out exactly what it is.
But you know, I tend to think that it's the thought form, because if it will be the om before the thought form, then you will need to have a third note afterwards, and that doesn't show.
Well, he does come to the point where he's going to say that we do make a sound, and that sound will augment whatever we've got on the mental plane. So let's see what he means exactly by the secondary note. First of all, let's reread it. He begins then to visualize in detail the form he is seeking to build. I'm just reading the black. He pictures it with his component parts and sees before his mind's eye the consummated product of the egoic meditation as he has succeeded in bringing it through. It should be a replica of the egoic meditation. This produces, now, what is producing it? The picturing of it? He pictures it.
Yeah.
This is after this.
Yeah. But he sees before his mind's eye, right?
Okay, so this, and let's just say, is this, the picturing of the egoic creation. So at this, let's just call it process. This produces what is here called the secondary note. The first being the note emanating from the ego on its own plane, which awakened the reflection and called forth response. Now remember, the ego sounds a note, we hear the note, and we wake up and say, I think I better create something. You know, the ego is always sounding a note, and we have to respond to it. The vibration becomes stronger, and the note sounded by the man on the physical plane ascends and is heard upon the mental plane. So whatever note we're looking for, this secondary note might be the note sounded by the man. Might be. Okay. On the physical plane ascends and is heard upon the mental plane. This note sounded by the man on the physical plane has an effect upon the mental plane and upon the creation that is there under construction. A note is sounded on the physical plane. He on the physical plane is strengthening the point of light on the mental plane, but he is working on the physical plane having access to the mental plane. Words of explanation. Hence, in all meditation that is of occult value, the man has to do certain things in order to aid in bringing about the results. See, because anything that exists sounds its own note. I mean, an existence has a note. But the question is, technically, is he talking about the man sounding a note upon the physical plane? Is this, then shall the second sound go forth? Is that what is meant here? That the magician sounds an augmenting, strengthening note, which then reaches the physical, the mental plane, and increases the, whatever it is, the note, the picture, the form on the mental plane.
In a sense, it's like a little mini Antikorana that he's reaching up to that point from the physical up to the mental.
Yes, and he's visualizing it, you know, and he's thinking of it, but he's doing something on the physical plane to augment the strength of his creation.
Right.
And that tells us something, too. about when we create something, how we strengthen it. You know.
Here's my thought. The man thinks he concentrates, and there is a note sounded by the growing thought form.
Mm-hmm. There is
okay,
that.
There is
by
the growing thought form. So what the man does then is physically sounds a note that's resonant with that, as you're saying, to augment that because of the sound of the word. Or the power of the spoken word.
What are you saying when you say that, though? He then physically sounds the note that corresponds to that. What does that mean?
Well, that you can make it mean something. If what is the quality of the thought form being there? On what ray is it? Let's just say on what ray.
Right.
Because if you know on what ray it is, you can sound a note which corresponds to that ray. You can sound a G, a C, I'm just being very simple about it, an E, depending upon what ray, you can visualize the color, sound a note which will correspond with or augment the quality of the note you're trying to create.
That was the purpose.
If you've identified
sound
that note.
Quality is so critical in the process.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, sound.
He may mean that. He doesn't go so far as to say it. But Diane, I think, has intuited something here about how you sound the note.
Just say on the physical plane. The note sounded by the man on the physical plane.
Sure, but now we want to get more precise.
Yeah.
And say, what kind of note shall we sound?
Mm-hmm.
And shall it be in resonance, qualitative resonance, with what we're trying to create?
Right.
And maybe we have the skill to do that, maybe we don't, but one day we will. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just thinking in more general, practical terms, when we have received some impression from soul levels, we, for instance, the Mori Federation, when it lodges in someone's brain, we then respond to that. It evokes some kind of response from us. And the response in reaction or in meeting this incoming impression has it sounds its own note. And as we begin to focus and to bring all the elements together that seem to be related as part of that impression, it's creating its own note, but this is the secondary note, the primary note coming from the soul, and then the note from the recipient who in the physical brain has received that.
Okay, so I want to make sure I understand. You say that the original idea, when received by the recipient, I think you said sounds its own note.
The soul sounds a note, and then it reaches the man on the physical plane in the physical brain.
Okay.
And then the man on the physical plane sounds his own note in response to that, just by...
His response is a note.
Yes.
Isn't that the secondary note? The second?
Well, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to determine that, because he also tells us the man definitely sounds the own.
Yeah.
See, that's another thing. So, in a way, you know, the response of the man has its own note. And, you know, if the man sharpens his response and hones it and makes it more powerful and beautiful, then he's definitely deliberately sounding a note.
Yeah.
The response itself, I'm responding to that, that's a note.
Yeah.
But if I grab a hold of my response and now start to shape it and make it even more cultured and more aligned, that's another note. And then there's also the note on the mental plane itself of the thing you are creating.
Mm-hmm.
That has its own note. So we can't really avoid notes. You know.
Well, there's more description in energy paragraphs.
Yeah, it is coming, exactly. So let's see, he tranquilizes, what must a man do in order to aid in bringing about results? Okay, of a cult value. He tranquilizes his bodies in order that there be no impediment to egoic intent, and listens to the voice of the silence, in this case the voice of the soul, or ego. He responds then to that voice consciously and broods over the imparted plans. It's a nice second-rate thing to do, to brood, meaning, you know, with incubating heat, you might say.
This is the magical process. As Solar Logos, when he was bringing the solar system forth, there is this brooding.
Brooding, yeah.
That is so important before he
goes. And he might have received it from a still higher source.
That is the thing.
Logos doesn't necessarily just dream something up, but his own ego provides that.
And then comes, after that, the visualization, so the other stuff.
Remember that the soul of Logos is not yet causally conscious on his own level. Think of it. He's not an initiate of the third degree, meaning he has still much to learn about his own energy system.
And you know what? I was thinking exactly that's why Solar Logos says AUN and not the O.
Mm-hmm.
Of course he
says, okay.
But because of that he still works with the three worlds.
Yeah, that may be the case, indeed. Now here comes the actual sounding. So first brooding, then sounding, okay? Now actually what's going to happen, you know, you can see what we have to do. We have to do just what BK did for Rule 1, and we have to make that 10-point list of this you do, then you do this, then you do this, then you do this, and, you know, if someone wants to do it, it will make things much clearer for us. Otherwise, we have to keep... Because, you know, BK's method of writing is usually very woven together. So, unless he makes a list for you of specific steps and stages, which he often does, you have to kind of go up in there and pull them out yourself and set them in order. But if we would do that, we would learn a lot. However, it would take, you know, not for a class, it would take a studential act in silence to do that. He then sounds the sacred word, taking up the note of the ego as he believes he hears it. Because, you know, you don't necessarily get this thing in full accuracy. You have to say, this is my impression, you know, and that's what we usually say. This is my impression. And sending it forth to swell the egoic sound and to set it in motion on the mental plane. And right there is the motion. Set in motion, matter on the mental plane. So here is the whole process right there. And it seems that there is, quite apart from the sophisticated things that we've said, there is a very concrete second note that goes out here. And this, and there is a reciprocal loop, there is a loop between the sounding man and the sounding ego. So in other words, the ego is sounding, and now I'm sounding the note that I believe I hear. I'm reinforcing what, and according to what I am sounding, I'm trying to make stronger the impression of the ego's note upon me. So in a way, I'm trying to swell my impression of the ego's note. And now we get this loop going that DK talked about in this rhythm of meditation between the two.
Not what I'm thinking is that the secondary note, it will be the thought form that is created after the impression of the soul, but then we add the sacred word that is the Om as we send it out. So it's like I think the Om comes now, but the secondary note.
Well, okay. So Tara, you are differentiating the secondary note from the Om that the magician sounds in response to the sensed egoic note. Okay, so, okay, this is all possible, and I think we have to brood on this just a bit to establish what we really think is the case. Let's read this again.
In a sense, what I see is that the ego or the soul or anger, whatever, is wanting to project this thought form all the way to the physical plane.
Right.
So the white magician is there and is responding, saying, oh, okay, you're sending me a package.
Right, right.
And sort of, you know, setting up the line of communication, like, this is where it's beginning and this is where it's going to end.
Right.
But he's got to, like, get on board and follow it through the whole process till it arrives on the physical plane.
And
it's sort of like telling the soul, okay, I've got your message, and I'm going to do anything I can to help UPS get it here on time, and, you know.
Right. See, I have a feeling that one of the things that's happening is that he's telling us how it is that matter on the mental plane is actually strengthened.
Right.
He's saying basically we get that impression, and as we try to strengthen the impression we're receiving or clarify it, that whatever is on the mental plane is now vitalized and starts to grow as a result of this process.
And I think also that line that the white magician then says A-U-M because it goes into matter. And when he says O-M, O-M, then he turns back to the soul.
Okay. Okay.
Is that accurate?
AUM is related to matter. OM is related to the soul. Yes, that is so.
And so the soul is saying AUM.
No, soul says OM.
OM.
And then the white magician working like Robert was saying.
Directing the downflow.
Putting that forward because the white magician is the agent for the soul.
Right.
And then puts that into matter, manifests that. Further on, but when the white magician turns towards the soul, then he says Om, because he tries to link and become the same as the soul.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, we need to practice this. You
right.
know, we need in a way to sit here and to attune with something the soul is trying to say, because a note is sounding. We need to kind of swell it or, you know, grow it within our consciousness, which automatically has the effect of making a creation upon the mental plane.
Given creative meditation that we have been working through with Lucille Cedergrant's work, in which this is very much reflective of it, and so we sit in silence and we receive some impression in that silence, and then we spend some time contemplating it and giving it more concrete
brooding,
form.
Brooding is a
brooding
state
on
of
it, yes, right? And then the process then consists of projecting it forward from the cave into the Ajna Center on the sound of the Om. But with this is the case, the Om.
Okay.
So,
well, then that sounds also like another step. It sounds like there's a need to really make sure there's a very detailed representation of the thought form, as you said. You know, before one does any projecting, one has to make sure the structure is what you want.
And in fact, you know, when we work in this creative process, it says that it takes at least several days because we have a tendency of trying to project too quickly from the mental plane, and it loses its strength. So
our
we
form.
Need to build, you know, take some time to build that thought form a lot. And there's a lot more than what she's describing that happens today.
You're half baked and half cooked. I mean, I'm reminded of how we can say, hey, that's a great idea, let's go with it, you know?
Right.
It's a great idea, let's go. This is the Aries problem. I know this very well. Ready, fire, aim, absolutely. Okay, Helena, you have a point?
Yeah, I'm remembering when in our PhD class and the master class, we were using meditation forms that DK gave, one of which was meditation 4.
Right.
And there seems to be a lot of relationship here with what we're studying here in meditation 4, because he'll tell us in group to go into the soul and listen and ascertain what is it that the soul is trying to impress upon us in order to create.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we create it, he'll say, when we get that, then he'll say to energize it. And we energize it with an Om. So I think some of the steps are right in that meditation.
Yes. It's one of the most powerful of the meditation. Let's just read this last paragraph and take a break. He then sounds the sacred word, taking up the note of the ego as he believes he hears it, and sending it forth to swell the egoic sound and set in motion matter on the mental plane. This is before maybe any form of real manifestational projection, because we're still cooking here. He synchronously with this sounding visualizes the proposed thought form, which is to embody egoic purposes, and pictures it in detail. And this is so important, what is just said here. Sounding and visualizing together. So this, and I've often, I think this really does work. I mean, you know, I've worked on it this way myself. I have built thought forms. I have strengthened them with the Om, and I've made sure that the note I am working with and the colors I am working with are in harmony with what I'm trying to build. So sounding and visualizing together. So definitely a second sound is going forth. And he's telling us this is how to build in strength and in detail. So the OM is part of the building process. But you have to keep your ear open, the inner ear, let's say. So that you are in harmony with what the ego is attempting to impress, and that's where distortion can enter in. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. I think that's a very important point, because the ego, as it creates a causal seed, it has a wholeness to it. It is all there in the embryo, and it has its own developmental cycle built within it. And we need to be sensitive. We need to somehow sense the true sound of that creative idea and not impose our own limited or distorted ideas on it. And that it has, and let it unfold naturally, organically, through its own inherent consciousness or force.
Yes.
Truth.
Organic unfolding is important. Right. So it's so easy. To force from the personality level.
You know, because
and impose the old.
The wisdom in that is to let the real moments happen. If one holds that within and in the silence, it will be worked out magically.
I think one has to be very careful with the building process. Not go from impression to projection too fast. Because, you know, you want to make sure that qualitatively what you've got is really what is intended.
And often what emerges is something quite different than you may have envisioned at the beginning.
Certainly than your first grab on it, because you've got to refine your impression. You know, it's like light, what do you call it, that kind of photography that we have to leave the negative open to the light for a long time. Mm-hmm. What's it called?
Time exposure,
because the whole image doesn't hit all at once in all detail. Yes, Gail.
How can we apply what we're talking about here to our meditation at the time of the full moon, where we pick a world problem? What we've been doing in our group is everybody picking their own world problem. And
okay,
not
sure.
Sure, the experience. Wouldn't it be better to have some of it? Let's do this and
sure.
Let it germinate in the group.
Well,
that makes sense,
there's
right?
value for either one. In your own groups, I would suggest you do just what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But when you're all over the world, you know what I mean, and you have
right.
different insights into different problems, I hesitate to say, just choose this one.
No, I just mean in our own
groups. I would do what you say.
Especially with inexperienced people
yeah.
that we can kind of
I think that's good.
That's
yeah, that's very good. Yes.
Strengthen it.
Yes. Yeah.
And all of these last several points go in that daily summary at the end, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
These are all quite
yeah. We're doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You were going to say that.
Yeah. The monthly full moon meditation, I think, is a wonderful reflection of the creative process. We can look at it in a couple ways. In a single meditation, we go through these same steps. We open ourselves to a goal of compression, and then the classic occult meditation format. Then we begin to formulate those impressions into concrete thoughts regarding our service activities, our disciplines, or whatever. So that's a kind of a mini white magic process. And then there's the other kind of long-term one that we creates the experiences and activities in our life from day to day. The soul is creating that experience and those creative opportunities for us. So
mm-hmm.
on many different scales, this you can see like magic.
Yes, exactly, Jay. And we're just going to leave this and then we'll take our break. We must not forget that we are here dealing with those conscious meditations based on knowledge and long experience, which produce magical results on the physical plane. We are not dealing here with those meditations which have for their purpose the revelation of the inner God and the bringing in of the illuminating fire of the ego. This presumably has been accomplished.
To a degree.
This presumably has been done, yes. If we shall add near the humble point to a degree. Okay. When this process is proceeding under rule and order, the focal point of energy on the lower mental plane gains in strength, Om Fed. Yes, an Om Fed form. Yes, yes. Okay. Its light of fire makes itself felt. It becomes, in the occult sense, visually objective if we have the mental vision to see it, and attracts the attention of the lesser builders. And that's where the myriads gather around its glowing warmth. And they're going to obscure it. And, you know, you're like the Blessed One, deep hidden in your ark. And you float upon the waters. And eventually, there has to be a translucency that allows the light to go forth. So this is a new phase of this third rule, and we'll take that when we come back. It's 10:13 now, so just take a few minutes. Come back. Okay.
Come back.